This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike DiTillo along with Charlie Long in studio at 5:45. Steve Geller will join us for our triple option feature at 4:20. Gary Smith, who does an unbelievable job covering Tulane Green Wave, if it's football, baseball, basketball, will be on with us to talk about the new indoor facility that is being built for the Green Wave and specifically certainly for Tulane football. Also update on Tulane as they play Southeastern, the Lions, this afternoon. Charlie, I think the big news this today and certainly the Phil Galliano news, I don't think was – that was sort of expected that he would get the job, but it's the salary cap and the NFL making the announcement today that the salary cap jump will go from $255.4 million to an estimated $277.5 to $281.5 million. And that'll be determined over the next week as the legal counsel for the NFL and NFLPA work out the agreement, and we'll get basically the complete figure on it sometime next week. Most teams in the NFL projected that the salary cap would be 267 to 269. So it took a pretty good jump from what a lot of teams had projected it to be. And basically, if you go by the 268 or 269 that most teams thought, that's a little over $13 million more than it was a year ago, and then takes the jump. Let's say it goes to 280, just kind of cutting everything in between. That's a pretty good jump. It helps all 32 teams. Doesn't help just one. It helps all 32 teams. But for the Saints, who are in a salary cap dilemma this year, it gives you a little bit more breathing room to work with the numbers. And again, you'll find out the exact figures sometime next week as the NFL and NFLPA work out the final numbers to it. It is a plus for all 32 teams, but for a team who's $40 or $50 million, whatever the projection is, it's certainly a jump and a good one. Is it significant? I don't think it really changes a lot of your plans because you know what you got to work around salary cap wise when you maybe have projected it to be 270 and it goes to 280. $10 million and you still in a lot of debt It does help. It doesn't solve all your issues, but does go to show, man, the NFL is a cash cow that keeps rolling in. And over a 24-month period, the salary cap will have jumped over $50 million. You know where it really helps? The players.
That's what I was about to say. It helps the big-time free agents that are entering the market this offseason, Mike. And just think about like T. Higgins. And did you see the report? Jamar Chase wants $40 million per average annual
value.
That
doesn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't surprise me either. I always thought that kind of beating Justin Jefferson by 1 cent wouldn't make him happy. He always wanted to blow him up.
He wanted a little bit more than the penny. I think maybe when they were both vying for it,
right?
He liked that idea that he would get a few more bucks than Jefferson. I don't know if you'll get $40 million. From the Bengals?
From the Browns?
From the Bengals, there ain't no way.
The Brown family? No, absolutely
no,
not.
No, Mike Brown ain't cutting him no mule. That's going to pay him no $40 million a year. But he's going to get a pretty significant chunk of change out of that. But it does, in a money-driven league now, and we're seeing all these venues, if it's Netflix, Amazon, Peacock, you name it, all that money rolling in, there's a lot of overseas money we don't even know about. That's not even being calculated into all of this today. The NFL has survived in an unbelievable manner like no other sport in America today.
But like you mentioned, the salary cap increase over the last 2 years, $53 million is what it's projected. Over two seasons. That's a gigantic boost. And yes, it does help the Saints, but as you mentioned, Mike,
well, everybody else too.
It helps everyone else as well, but the Saints still have some work to do, even with the increase, to get cap compliant and build a roster for 2025. It's not like this is, you know, the salary cap is increasing, now the Saints are good to go. No, they still have some things that they have to figure out. So
it's a two-stitch on a five-stitch wound.
Yeah, that's a good way of
putting like that. Also today, we're going to have LSU Nickel State, but that has been postponed. I think it's now set up for April, an April date in Thibodeau. I think they play again sometime next week. I think it's in Baton Rouge. Charlie, right. You have the news on that?
So this is the new kind of schedule update. The games have shifted around a little bit. On Monday, February 24th, as you mentioned, next week, Nichols will play at Alec Box Stadium. The game at Ben Meyer Diamond Field in Thibodeau will be Tuesday, April 8th. So things got moved around a little bit. They'll still play multiple games. It wasn't like it was outright canceled. It was just postponed due to the inclement weather. And I think poor field conditions as well reported out in Thibodeau with the storms going on.
Yeah, we caught a little bit more rain than maybe others did. And Thibodeau, I don't know why, but normally you get it there a little bit more than some of the other spots in South Louisiana.
So they will still be playing two games this season. It's just going to be kind of shifted a little bit to where they'll play a Monday game this upcoming week
and then
at
in
Alec
April.
Box, and then they'll play in Thibodeau in April, Tuesday, April 8th.
Okay. Phil Galliano did get the job today as a special teams coordinator. I know we have talked about it a few times on Sports Talk. I remember, we know they'd set us up with these interviews with Darren Rizzi every year, and Darren, Bobby would ask him about, you know, what about continuity? And he was, Bobby, continuity on special teams? We don't have no continuity. I lose more guys on special teams than any other unit. He said, you know, I got JT Gray I keep, and sometimes I get to keep the deep snapper, but a lot of those guys, it's changing tremendously year to year. And he said, you know, it's a job that you have to adjust to the talent that you have. And a lot of times guys that are on special teams and their contract's up, they want to go to another team. They want to play a little bit more on offense or defense. You don't have the JT Grays that, you know, basically their specialty is there, or punter, place kicker, and deep snapper. So I think about, you know, when Phil came in 2019, and he's worked with Darren Rizzi the entire time, and I think Darren's the best special teams coach in the National Football League. They redid the rules, and a lot of it was based off of him, his information, and what he thought the kickoff rules should be, and they really like what he had suggested to them. So Phil Galliano becomes the full-time special teams coordinator. I know on one of the Monday night shows when we're doing the coaches show with Darren Rizzi, he praised Phil Galliano and his ability to set things up. He used that term. He did a lot of grunt work for me, as an assistant special teams coach. And it's the ever-changing part of special teams. You don't have the same guys year in, year out, in being able to get the most out of those players. So Phil Galliano, now new special teams coach for the Saints, and the Saints have a new director of sports science in Ted Rath. Ted started his career. He had a short run in with the Detroit Lions, also the Miami Dolphins. But in 2018, he was the director of strength, conditioning, and performance with the LA Rams, 2018, 2019. In 2020, he goes to Philadelphia, and he was their sports science director of basically there of strength and conditioning from 2020 to 2023. He was not there in 2024. There's a lot of changeover in those type of positions in the National Football League, but people say, well, is to connect the dot with Kellen Moore. Well, Kellen was 1 year in Philly, so he'd heard a lot about Ted Rath, though, and what he had done with the Eagles organization. So change there in their director of sports science for the Saints.
Yeah, with Galliano specifically, we talked with Jeff Nowak about it yesterday. He said it makes all the sense in the world because when Rizzi was promoted to interim head coach, Galliano basically served as the special teams coordinator this past season for the final half of the year, basically this final 8 weeks. And what Galliano did, there wasn't that big of a drop-off in special teams play for the Saints. And to my point about the continuity from the Sports Flash, it's more of, you get to keep, your current core special teamers in place as far as your kicker and Blake Groupie, your punter, and then also, the gunners that Galliano's been good at finding with JT Gray and then most recently kind of Rico Payton. So that's kind of what I meant by continuity. But Galliano sticking around, getting the promotion as special teams coordinator.
That Smith kicker is going to give Blake Groupie a run for his money.
They both may be NFL kickers, Mike.
And he came to us when we were doing the thing on a Radio Row, Media Row, for the convention center. And, man, he's a lot bigger than I thought. To take a good look at him. Man, he's a big guy. And he was like, I was the biggest guy in my village.
He's a little bit different than Blake Groupie.
a lot different. But, man, he made Bobby crack up about, man, I was the biggest guy in my village. And so that was just the way he talked. A great guy. And he gets it that a lot of this kicking is mental, between the ears. And so, but I also understand Darren's part about, man, continuity. We don't get to keep the same guys. Offensively and defensively, they get to keep a lot of the same guys. Man, we kind of, 52 pickup. We pick it up. We get to keep a couple, not just everybody that was on the team a year ago. When we come back, Gary Smith will join us, who covers the Tulane Green Wave. Talk to us about the Green Wave playing Southeastern today, and also about the new indoor facility for the Green Wave right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Does a great job covering the Tulane beat for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. And also, he's the publisher of The Wave Report, Gary Smith. Gary, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Gary, as it's still 3-1, I know Southeastern had that lead over the Green Wave, still 3-1.
Bases loaded for Southeastern with two outs in the fourth inning, so Tulane needs to get out of that jam or it could be a big problem on a ridiculously cold day. And man, am I glad that I'm not at that ballpark.
I get you.
Their press box is outdoors, by the way, for baseball, for the media. So, That's not the reason I'm not there. I'm not there because Tulane's playing a basketball game tonight, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I have a son-in-law that covers some of that. He's told me a little bit about how it's a bit nippy out there when you're trying to cover it for a baseball game. Gary, is something that I just basically almost got overwhelmed because of so many stories happening in New Orleans with the Super Bowl, with Kellen Moore getting the head coaching position with the Saints, and certainly even LSU baseball sort of tsunamied everything, but the announcement that Tulane would have an indoor facility, and it's being built on Carrollton in the parking lot area?
On Claiborne, yeah. Right on the other side of the baseball stadium.
Okay. I've heard from Tulane people, it's well over 20 years. Oh, when are they going to build an indoor? And my thing is, man, I can't tell you. I know they have one at University of Louisiana in Lafayette. Mm-hmm. Nichols State's had one. This is in year two. They have one. And, it seemed to be every time they bring in a new coach, we're going to get you an indoor facility. Well, finally, it looks as though that's going to happen.
Right, and you mentioned, by the way, how busy it's been around here. I'll tell you how busy it's been. I wrote a full story. I went to the public meeting on that and wrote a full story on that with quotes from John Starr. It never ran in the newspaper. It ran on NOLA.com, of course. But they didn't have room that day, and then I think they just forgot to put it in the paper after that. And yeah, it's only as Tulane's new athletic director now, a year into his tenure, David Harris said that was the absolute number one question fans wanted him to answer every time he talked to them. So yeah, it's a big deal. Now, it's not an ideal facility because it's going to go on the Claiborne parking lot. It's only going to be 65 to 70 yards. So they're not going to for like in-season practices, you can't run offense scout team and defense scout team at the same time on a field like that. But it's a heck of a lot better than what they had before, which was nothing. if a thunderstorm popped up, they had to either go to the Saints indoor facility on short notice. And, you know, they got classes, they've got other things. You got to deal with the logistics of busing there and back. Now they just have to walk past the baseball stadium to continue having practices. And also John Sumrall told me on a hot day, which every day is in New Orleans early in the football season, like in preseason camp, when you can't do two a day practices anymore, but they do a practice and a walkthrough every day, and they'll love being able to do the walkthrough indoors to just get out of some of that ridiculous New Orleans summer heat. So again, you want it, you'd prefer to have a full field, but they're just simply, Tulane has no space for that on campus, and this is a much better alternative. They were thinking about one that was going to be near the Riley Center on the other side of the football stadium a little ways away, and that one was probably going to be even smaller. So this was the single best option that they had right now. And
Gary,
yeah, they're excited about it.
Gary, is it fully enclosed? Because I know the one in Thibodeau, it's like three quarters down, and you know, because you can actually see. We actually did a remote for Louisiana Line Camp, and we were on one side. We could see through that. It was pouring down rain, but the kids, it didn't bother them. They were inside, so it didn't really matter.
As far as I know, it is. I mean, it's going to be enclosed. It's going to be on the side. They're going to have a removable closure on the side and the top, and for weather purposes, if a hurricane's coming. We saw it happen at Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg, and that's a much bigger facility. So it's going to be removable, but yes, it is going to be enclosed, and it also is going to be the proper width for a football field. So they're going to have that too, and then the top, it's going to be about 60 feet. The cover on top is going to be about 60 feet high. The funny thing is they should have probably run the release by John Sumrall when they did it, because when they ran the release, they said that it was going to allow for kicking and punting. You can't punt in the Saints indoor facility, much less that. So there's not going to be any punting, but they're going to be able to do everything else there.
What is the time frame for that to be to start and to finish? Because it's always later than they. Because listen, I'm in a renovation at my house, you know, and they give you that deal. 2 weeks, two weeks, man. It ain't never 2 weeks. It ain't never 2 months or whatever they give you. You expect the over. Bet the over on it.
We live in New Orleans, and so we know how that works.
Yes.
Even more so here than maybe other places. But they did point out to me that they did bigger projects that aren't athletics related, dorms and other stuff, and they finished right on time. So that were much more complicated than this one. But the target date is before. It is in August. The season opener is, I think, like August 30th against Northwestern. That's Northwestern University in Illinois, not Northwestern State. They want it to be ready before that. It's likely not going to be ready for the beginning of preseason drills, which will be what, like August 2nd, somewhere around that. That's the target date. And they said they've in the last couple of years, they've completed bigger projects than that on time. So we'll see. But they definitely want it to be ready before the start of the first game of the year.
Yeah, good luck to them. That's all I can tell you at this stage. You got it right. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. Tim Brando and I were talking about this, and Timmy and I have kind of beat this around, that the way the college football season is, I think that that's going to be a push to maybe jump up the season, to not start this in late August, but to push it up into mid or, you know, say like August 10th or 12th, and not have to go up against the National Football League for your playoff situations. And I think that is getting a little bit of traction, that people believe, okay, well, look what you have to go. Yeah, it's hot. Well, it's hot in September. It's hot in August. Yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm. You can't tell a difference between an August heat and a September heat. Not down here, you can't. It's the same.
Sure.
So my thing is, do you think that will become an eventuality, that just because of the logistics and how things are breaking down, and we're going now probably from 12 to at least 16, you know, in the playoff system, that it would be moved up into, say, mid-August instead of late August?
You know, I had not actually heard that. I understand where it's coming from. I'm not a big fan of that for a couple of reasons. This quaint old idea about college athletics being, you know, partially for students. I know that's a crazy idea in these times and that yeah. stuff like that. A lot of schools haven't started semesters that early. There are some places where it is a lot hotter. They are certainly here. You're right. It doesn't make a difference. The NFL is king. That's not going to change. They definitely need to work on the dates better for when they're doing some of these things. I actually like the idea of having a bunch of playoff games on January 1st. That seems to work well. Going back to the past with having big games on January 1st. So I'd have to think. I had not heard that. I'd have to think about that some time. And for purely selfish reasons on my part, man, does that cut into my summer break if teams start practicing 4 weeks before the start of the season.
It's going to be like the NFL, Gary. It's going to be, those OTAs. Okay, you work into that. Oh, they don't have preseason in college football. Anyway, hey, roll it out August 13th or whatever. And then, because look what you're going up against in August, preseason football. What?
Yeah.
If you play in these big games, like I think they'll try to project early, man, listen, all I can hear is a cash register ring in the background.
You have a point there.
Gary,
no doubt.
Switching some gears a little bit to college baseball season is officially underway, as you mentioned, Tulane and Southeastern. That's now on the top of the fifth, so they did get out of that bases loaded situation.
Yes, they did.
It's still 3-1 here. But the opening season series sweep of Omaha, picking up all three wins at Turchin Stadium. I want to get your thoughts on kind of a two-sided coin flip here. Your thoughts on how Tulane looked in that opening weekend, and also a scouting report on Omaha. They're kind of doing a tour of South Louisiana right now. They beat Nichols yesterday, and then LSU hosts them this upcoming weekend. So your thoughts on how Tulane looked in the opening series sweep, but also your thoughts on Omaha, who LSU plays this upcoming weekend.
It's so hard to judge on an opening weekend. Look, Omaha is not supposed to be very good. I think they actually were the top seed in the Summit League Conference tournament last year and got bounced two straight, but their RPI was like 290 or something, like 270 or something like that. They didn't look very good against Tulane. Tulane looked good. They didn't, but I was impressed that Tulane had never in the history of the program with some storied years ever scored 10 or more runs in all three games of an opening weekend series. And they did against Omaha. And I was like, but consider who you're playing. Then Omaha goes to Thibodeau and beats Nichols 5-2. So there's something to be said for that. Their pitching staff did not impress me at all over the weekend. Their control wasn't very good. I mean, LSU, that could be pain for the Omaha pitching staff, but it's so early in the year. You never know. Sometimes teams are supposed to stink, turn out to be pretty good. We'll see.
I'll bring it back to football to you. What do you think might be an area to that Coach Sumrall would look at to go back into the second phase of the portal, because that opens up again. It's just like free agency for the NFL.
Yeah, sure.
And you got two versions of it, one early in the year and one late, a little bit later, that he would want to try to upgrade on this football team.
Well, you're never going to turn down a pass rushing defensive end. I think you start there, but I think he's going to be, how does spring practice go? Because we saw last year, he was terrified about his cornerbacks after spring practice. They ended up with a walk-on Rishi Rattan being basically the best cornerback they had by the end of spring. What did they do? They went out and got their two starter caliber cornerbacks in the late period, and two of their top three cornerbacks during the season from that period. So I think you don't ever turn down great players, and Tulane has gotten into a position where they're much more competitive for really good guys. But I think a lot will be on how they practice in the spring and where they identify their weaknesses as to what area they'll hit hard.
Gary, one of the things Coach, and he told it to me twice, and I sort of asked him a little bit different both times, and he came back with the same answer, is that, Mike, listen, we recruit guys that we know we aren't going to land coming out of high school. But it's what happens after that. What if that individual doesn't get the playing time that he thought he would get somewhere, and we have a connection with him, And he said that is something that I am always going to emphasize here at Tulane, that, okay, we got a lot of talent in the state of Louisiana, and I'll go outside to do the exact same thing. But just because a guy, we're not in the bunch to land the five-star, we're not going to back off of him because there is that other option. He may come back and be open to us again.
No doubt. And that's why you've seen Tulane has some big timers in already in the recruiting process that, in all frankness, they're probably not going to get originally. It's the right approach. And certainly he's that's where I'm there. Willie Fritz did an incredible job at Tulane, but John Sumrall has elevated Tulane in the type of players that they're at. I mean, again, I don't have to go any farther than saying Mario Williams. That's a guy who would never have even remotely considered Tulane in the past. He was not happy with where his career was going at USC. He came to Tulane, and boy, did he end last year in terrific fashion. The last three or four games, he was the star on the team when the offense was having a lot of problems otherwise. That's the right approach. Just John Sumrall just elevated recruiting all around, just in who they're getting. They're obviously, it's going to be hard for a non-power four school to get a guy that LSU is going after, that's aimed at the big guys are going after out of high school. But you absolutely have a chance to get those guys the second time around. And if you've already built a relationship with them, which Mario Williams had a relationship with one of Tulane's assistant coaches already, that could be huge down the road.
Gary, I'm glad you staying warm and staying not wet. So thanks for the update on the baseball part.
I'm watching those Tulane players that have like almost like masks on their face. I mean, they've got coverings on their face, and I'm thinking, I wouldn't have done well trying to type on my keyboard outside today in a game like that.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. Gary Smith does a great job covering Tulane athletics for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, and also he's the publisher of thewavereport.com. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, I want to thank Gary Smith for joining us as he's covering Tulane versus Southeastern, and at least Tulane got out of the inning with the bases loaded, and it's still 3-1 is what he has reported to us before he got off the air with us. Want to tell everybody, we've had some texts about it, but today's scheduled game between LSU and Nicholls State has been postponed due to the weather and certainly some of the conditions there. There was some heavy rain in the Thibodaux area, so they decided to postpone it. That game has been moved now to Tuesday, April 8th. So Nicholls State will play LSU in Thibodaux on Tuesday, April 8th. But they'll see each other a little bit closer than that, because LSU will host the Colonels at 6 p.m. on Monday, February 24th. Charlie, yesterday we had on Joe Reedy and talking about the Chargers, and he brought up the fact that he only thought one of the two defensive ends would be returning to the Chargers for 2025, and he leaned heavily toward Khalil Mack. There are reports now out on the West Coast that it's very likely Joey Bosa will get a release, and part of that is that if he's on the roster at a certain time, they will owe him $12.36 million for a roster bonus.
Yikes.
So you can expect that Joey Bosa, who has fought a lot of injuries. Last year, I think, was the healthiest season he had in the last four or five. But he's a guy that, man, he's super talented as a pass rusher. But he's missed so much time due to injuries. Looks as though he will be out in the free agent market due to the fact that the Chargers would owe him $12.36 million.
Yeah.
For a roster bonus. That ain't his salary, just roster bonus.
Joey Bosa was someone that really hit the ground running in his NFL career as a former third overall pick. You know, and the production was there because he was healthy early on, but that's kind of come to a halt in recent years, Mike. Like, if you're looking, you know, his first year in 2016, 10.5 sacks, 17, 12.5, and then a couple years later, 11.5, 10.5 again. So he really did hit the ground running, but the last 3 years, five games played, only 2.5 sacks. In 2023, 9 games played, 6.5 sacks. And then this past year, as you mentioned, the most healthy he's been in quite some time. He played 14 games, but the production really didn't match with 5 sacks. So Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack is another one. When we were talking about free agents earlier, Mike, with Khalil Mack, I've seen a lot of kind of reports tying the veteran to like the Packers or something like that. And of course, that's just, you know, another a stud on the defensive line that the Packers could use on that already talented roster. But we'll see what happens with both of them. I agree with you. I think that Bosa will probably be the one that they decide to move on from. But, you know, maybe, I mean, do you think it's the situation where if they do move on from Joey Bosa, they'll do all they can to keep Khalil Mack? Or do you think it's potentially
I think they'll try everything because, man, listen, for his age, man, Khalil Mack, man, he's still a playmaker out on that field. And the thing, he's so versatile. You can use him at end. You could use him as a 4-3 defensive tackle. I even saw a couple times last year, he was on the nose. He was playing over the top of the center. I'm like, wow. Man, at his age to be doing that, and he's such a great athlete. He also has fought some injury issues over the last couple of years, but a tremendous player. And, you know, it happened right down the road from here, but the meetings with the SEC, Big Ten leaders, and I think we're very close to hearing from the SEC. A 9th SEC game on the schedule. I know Tim Brando and I spoke about this, and I think that Greg Sankey is going to submit that to everybody involved in the SEC about playing a 9th SEC game.
Talked a lot about it last summer, Mike, and it's finally coming to fruition. So
yeah, and you know, again, the cash register rings.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what this is all about. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long at 520. We'll have Glenn West, senior writer at go247.com, talking about LSU baseball, basketball, and football. And certainly got a lot to talk about. This is a season where it all kind of mixes all together. So we'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long at 520. We'll have on with the senior writer at go247.com talking everything LSU, baseball, basketball, football, Glenn West. 545 will be our triple option feature. Charlie, I know we had kind of batted it around, Bobby and I, about who would be the new offensive coordinator with the Eagles once Kellen Moore left. Well, today it was made official. Kevin Patello, who was their passing game coordinator, is now been elevated. He's the new offensive coordinator there. He's 43 years old. But think about this. Since 2007, these are the teams he's coached for. The Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills. He coached for the Titans in 2014. I remember that. The New York Jets. He went to college football for a short time with Texas A&M. Back to the NFL with the Indianapolis Colts. And in 2021, he comes to Philadelphia. And the last couple of years, he's been the passing game coordinator and associate head coach for the Eagles. And he's just 43 years old. Look at the vagabond life you live when you're an assistant coach at the college or pro level, how you sort of bounce around to try to get a shot at it. And one of the stories that's being told by Zach Berman, who covers the Eagles for the Philadelphia Inquirer, was that, you know, he's always had a good relationship with Nick Sirianni, Patello, always. And he can tell him, hey, you're being a jerk. So that must have been a full-time job for Patello to be telling that, because sometimes Nick, man, he's off the charts. The Saints were playing the Eagles in New Orleans. The same weekend, LSU had a home game. So Doug Nussmeier, you know, his son Garrett, is playing at LSU. And the staff really pushed for Nussmeier to go to the game. And their deal was, you got to bring it up to Nick. You got to bring it up to Coach Sirianni. Go to the game. We've got the game plan set. Go to the game and watch your son. Well, Patello was, I got it. And he's the one who pushed basically Sirianni to let Nussmeier go watch his son play. And so basically what Berman kind of pointed out, and I'm going to clean it up a little bit, he said he was the one guy on the staff that, you know, he would call out the head coach if he was acting like a jerk.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. You know, NBC Sports Philadelphia also put it out there to kind of echo your sentiments, Mike, that he was Sirianni's right-hand man, or he still is, I guess, so to speak, because he's still
now
on the staff.
Now he is.
But yeah, no, I mean, talk about hopping from place to place, Mike, the Colts, the Eagles in just the past couple of years. But before that, the Jets, the Titans, the Bills, the Chiefs. Oh, my goodness.
I went through, man. And you 43 years old. Goodness gracious.
He's been around the block.
Man, and he's had a lot of things in his head. And, boy, if I would like to take over a team running their offense.
Oh, yeah.
I sure would put Philadelphia at the top. Charlie, it's an interesting text we have here from 1509. He says, with the SEC and Southern baseball being so superior, if a Northern team manages to have an elite player, don't you think that teams from here will poach him? Should the Northern team simply drop baseball? No games are being played there in the early season. Well, one, Northern teams aren't going to drop baseball. They don't play it there because of the weather conditions. That's not going to happen. But if you have an elite player at a school up north, you can bet your bottom dollar those teams from the SEC and Southern schools are after them.
It's the same thing with the West Coast players, too, Mike. That's what we talked about with the decline of West Coast baseball and how it's really the SEC and the ACC battling it out. That's what we talked about all of last season as well, entering Omaha, where there's the two dominant conferences just keep scooping up all the best players. And when we brought this up yesterday, someone texted in a great point. It's kind of similar like the Paul Skeens effect, right?
Yes.
Where a player's great at a smaller program, and then he wants to test himself in the SEC. They decide to make that jump, and it's a big boom effect. Like, if you shine in one of these big conferences for one of these big teams, you're instantly on everybody's radar.
Darnell Dickerson, Utah Valley?
Charlie,
we saw the text when we had talked about the commitment and went through his stats. People, why are we getting a guy from Utah Valley? I think you saw why.
Yeah, he's already got 9 RBI.
Look how that guy plays. It doesn't matter where you start. It's where you finish. And I think Scott Sanders brought up a great point yesterday. He was a major league pitcher 8 years, 9 years in the majors. And he said, you know what? People said, why didn't you start at LSU? His deal is, you know what? I wasn't good enough to go to LSU when I came out of high school. But 2 years in, I would have probably been able to go. But you didn't have the rules like they are today to be able to kind of hop around without skipping a year. So he stayed at Nichols State. And still, he got to pitch for that long a period of time in the major leagues. Now with today, with the rules change, the ability to go from one school to the next sometimes is physical or mental maturity. We don't all mature at the same time. Either way, none of us do at the same rate. That give, man, Jay Johnson a lot of credit for going after guys, maybe not from the bigger schools, and we saw even from Wofford.
Right, Zach Cowan.
Yeah, Cowan.
No, exactly. And I mean, to a lesser extent as well, Jacob Myers from Nichols.
Yeah.
Like, they're bringing in guys that they think are talented and that they think can contribute in the SEC. Now, the NFL and the MLB are similar in the sense that both scouts, like MLB scouts and NFL scouts, will find you no matter where you are necessarily, right? You could be at a smaller school or a smaller program and they'll still find you. However, you know, if you shine, like in Daniel Dickinson's case at Utah Valley, as an all-conference player, and you instantly gain notoriety when you enter the transfer portal as a top-5 player in the portal, and Jay Johnson goes out and scoops you up and brings you to LSU, if you have a stellar year this year, like, you're going to be on more people's draft boards. It's just kind of how it is. So, you know, looking forward to seeing what he can accomplish this year. I mean, Coach Johnson, kind of to what Scott Sanders was saying yesterday, does not really care where you're from. If you can play, you can play. And if they think that they can develop you, they will go out and get you and bring you to Baton Rouge, which is one of the great parts of his recruiting. All the new transfers, 14 new transfers, 11 freshmen, all the new faces on this LSU, just not just pitching staff, but also in the lineup, they're all so talented. and they're all growing with this LSU program. So, you know, a lot of new faces, but regardless of the programs where they came from, they're wanting to test themselves in SEC baseball.
And also not just players. Think of the story he told about Brent Herring. Okay, we win the national championship, and we end up on the same plane. I end up talking to him and convince him to leave BYU to come to LSU. And he said, in a year's time, you'll get a chance to be a manager. You'll get to be the guy.
Look at Wes Johnson. Wes Johnson is now the head coach.
Was the exact
Georgia.
Same thing.
Right.
So it's not only players. Man, he's done the exact same thing with assistant coaches.
Real quick, Mike, did you see what happened? You know, it was circulating on social media. Georgia played Kennesaw State last night, and Wes Johnson got ejected in that game. And, like, Georgia had this huge pimp job on a home run, and they came back to beat Kennesaw State and their closer. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's pretty funny. I think, you know, a lot of baseball fans are kind of traditionalists, so when you show up your opponent, it's not, you know, the best look. But if you ever want to see a closer showing up his opponent, just go see what happened with Georgia and Kennesaw State last night.
We'll be back, and we'll have on with us Glenn West, senior writer at Go247.com, covering LSU baseball, basketball, and football right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Charlie Long. And we have on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, senior writer at Go247.com, Glenn West. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I hope you're inside, and at least you didn't have to cover LSU Nichols today. A little bit too much rain in Thibodeau.
Yeah, maybe a little too much rain, but also 30 degrees is usually not very good for the pitcher's arms. So I kind of see where they're coming from of, you know, pushing that game back to some warmer weather later in the season.
I'll start it off with the football segment. Julie Boudouin did an interview yesterday with Blake Baker, and basically he's saying that now that Harold Perkins is going to go back to playing the star position, which is basically sort of a hybrid spot between linebacker and safety. My thing is, I would tell him one thing. You see that guy who gets us the snap? Put him on his back. I mean, because that's what he does best. But one of the things, Glenn, I thought he had improved on was his ability to play coverage, to play in reverse. Yeah. He's not great against the run and will never be great against the run. He's a little light and he gets bounced around. But I think he has really become a pretty good cover guy in the reverse position. But, man, I got to put him up there and say, hey, sick him. Go after the guy with the football. Your thoughts on him returning back to that star linebacker position?
Yeah, I think it's the right move. And I think we kind of been, you know, kind of pushed in that direction ever since he decided to come back. I think, you know, him playing the star just made the most sense because it's kind of what they were leaning towards, you know, when he first got hurt last year. I mean, in the last couple of games, he had kind of moved a little bit further away from that linebacker, inside linebacker role, and they had moved him to more of a star position, which is what Major Burns was playing for most of 2024. So they kind of had slid Harold Perkins into that role, and you started to see a little bit of flashes of the old Harold, I thought. I thought he was really dynamic in that South Carolina game. That was his best game of the year. Was able to get in the backfield and create some havoc. He dropped in coverage, and I think he had an interception in that game. Was really consistent for him in that performance. And so I think it makes the most sense for him to be back at that star role. We'll see kind of how it looks in the spring because he's probably not going to be ready to participate much in the spring, if I had to guess.
I don't think so,
So, you know, I think what they decide to do there, what kind of opportunities rise for, you know, other guys, you know, that might be behind him on the depth chart in that position. You know, one thing we had heard is that maybe Tamarcus Cooley, the new transfer, plays closer to the line of scrimmage in spring and then could potentially move back in the fall just so he's equipped to play both spots. So that might be one direction they go. But in terms of Harold, yeah, I think don't ask him to do something that he's really – that's doesn't fit him the best. And I think what fits him best right now is a role where he's able to rush the passer on third down, where he can drop in coverage and use his speed on tight ends and some of those slot receivers and have him make some open field tackles and you know, out in space. And so I think that makes the most sense for him going forward.
Matt McMahon getting kind of that that kind of stamp that of approval, and hey, you'll be back, and we'll get you money. And we had one of the texters yesterday. He said, "Well, I thought they had that name, image, likeness already in place. You know, when Will Wade was there to make sure you had enough money." But okay, now it's all legal with it, and that's exactly what I told him. But it was sort of buried a little bit, and we always knew because Scott Woodward picked him, handpicked him. He was going to get some time here. It wasn't going to be a quick hook with Matt McMahon, but your thoughts on Matt and funneling more money that way to try to get players to play basketball at LSU. And, boy, that game Saturday highlighted. You watch Auburn, Alabama, and the difference with those guys and what LSU got ain't a little difference. It's a big difference.
Yeah, I think it's much needed, and I think they needed to come out and say this, and you know they did it through the media there with kind of the reporting. But you know, I think that it makes the most sense because to your point, they hired Matt McMahon to a 7-year contract, then knowing that the first couple years were going to be rough because of the sanctions and the restrictions that they had on recruiting the first few years. This past offseason was the first offseason where they didn't have any kind of recruiting restrictions. And so, you know, they were able to get on the road and recruit their best freshman class to this point in terms of ranking. They did as much as they could in the transfer portal. But, you know, to be quite honest with you, what they were dealing with in the portal in terms of NIL resources compared to what some of the other teams in this conference have, it's apples and oranges, and it's, you know, a little bit of David and a Goliath in terms of how much there was a difference there. So it's good to see that LSU is going to be investing a little bit more in the men's basketball program for next year, get him, you know, the resources that he needs to build the roster that can be competitive. And then you can kind of judge him next year, I think, on just kind of how they perform, because there will be no more excuses next year. You have to come out and you have to have a better effort than they did this year. And I don't mean to say that this team doesn't have effort or guys that are trying hard, but it's clearly, like you mentioned there, when you're watching Alabama and Auburn and Tennessee and Florida, and you're watching, you know, LSU and South Carolina last night, there is certainly a noticeable difference in terms of how those teams operate and the size that are on those teams and how successful they've been this year.
Glenn, just listening to LSU head baseball coach Jay Johnson after, you know, the first four games, he's mentioned a couple times that his team's kind of begging for a test, you know, after the first four games where they've been so dominant early on. But the good thing that you've seen is their production on the mound. And entering the year, we were all very high on their pitching staff. But I think the depth of that pitching staff is on full display very early. And I just want to get your thoughts on the starting rotation on the weekend early on, because Cade Anderson gets the Friday night start, or Friday, I guess it was Friday afternoon technically. Chase Shores is on Sunday, Anthony Ianson on Saturday. I think that's a really strong trio that we'll have to keep an eye on throughout the season, because sometimes it will change, right? Where, you know, a guy really starts to emerge and then he takes over a weekend rotation spot. But early on, from what you've seen from Cade Anderson, Anthony Ianson, and especially Chase Shores, who made his first start in basically 2 years, I think it was super impressive for the opening weekend.
Yeah, it certainly was. And you hate to overreact to just one weekend because, you know, it is Purdue-Fort Wayne and they're going to be stiffer competition ahead. But I think for all three of those guys, probably the most impressive part is that they were landing not only their fastballs for strikes, but they were landing their secondary pitches for strikes. And when you've got, you know, Chase Shorts shoving 98 on a Sunday and backing that up with an 85-mile-an-hour slider that's also landing for strikes, that's going to play in SEC. Like that's not just going to be a non-conference success story there. He's going to have success in the SEC too with that kind of command of his pitches. And so really all three of them, I thought, did a nice job of commanding the strike zone. And really that goes to the entire pitching staff. I mean, I think they're right upwards of around 60 strikeouts to just four walks or something like that through four games. I mean, it's pretty crazy the consistency that there's been across the mound from not just the starters, but the bullpen guys as well. So really strong start there. I thought that Anderson is a guy, just has that calm demeanor that you want on a Friday night guy. really looked the part there on Friday afternoon and did a nice job of striking guys out. And when he did get into one little bit of a jam, was able to go three up, three down the rest of the way and keep them from scoring. So certainly they haven't been tested the way that they are going to be in the SEC, but you'd like to see that they're pounding the strike zone and doing their jobs in these first several games.
Glenn, I think for every baseball coach, and I've heard Skip Bertman talk about this, you want to kind of have your core people in place. And he said sometimes early in the season you can kind of fool with a little bit of that. And then you it sort of emerges for you, your core people. But he said the other part about managing a team like that that's got talent is also keeping your secondary players, you know, focused and emerged into the game. Because a lot of times, if you're not playing, you know, you sort of drift a little bit. And I think about what Skip talked about in keeping guys that may not be an everyday player sort of focused and sort of understanding you're going to have a role and I'm going to call on you one day and you better be ready. And I think for this team, that is something that Jay Johnson's going to have to deal with also.
Yeah, no doubt. And just kind of piggyback off of that point, I mean, just as an example, Ashton Larson has been swinging the bat about as well as anybody on this roster here to start. I think he's hitting over 570. He's second on the team in RBIs, has a home run. He's only started in one of the four games. Like, he's had opportunities to pinch hit in pretty much every game so far, but he's only started in one of the games. And, like, to have that kind of buy-in from a player who is extremely talented but maybe is not starting every game, I think it just goes to show you the messaging, the communication that they've had in the offseason about, you know, all these players and how they can contribute to winning. And I think that's going to be an extremely important part of all this, is if LSU continues to have some continues to win games and is having success in the SEC and kind of settles in on a core 11, 12, 13 guys that are going to be playing the majority of the time, how they kind of keep the other guys up and developing throughout the season while maybe not playing as much as they'd want to, is going to be very interesting to watch unfold, because you never know when an opportunity might arise later in the season. And I think that's the approach that a lot of these guys have on the roster.
Jay made a really good point after the victory against Southern. You know, when Ethan Fry hit that 3-run home run, they kind of highlighted the 8-run inning that blew that game open. He mentioned after the game that he has a bunch of players that could be starters, and he said that 4 or 5 players, he has to figure out how to fit into 2 spots in the lineup. And if he can combine all their talents, and he said combine their talents to create basically 2 All-American-level talents, that's exactly what he's looking for here. So it's, as you mentioned, with Ashton Larson and Ethan Fry, Jake Brown, even Josh Pearson, all these guys are kind of vying for playing time. They'll get their games to play in and perform in. They just got to make the most of their moments, and so far that seems to be the case.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, to your point there, that right field spot and the designated hitter spot are the two where it really feels interchangeable with those 4 or 5 guys that you just mentioned. I would probably throw in maybe even a guy like Nick Paul, who has also appeared in all 4 games so far and has a couple hits to his name as well. Like, there's a legitimate 4 or 5 guys that are going to be competing for those spots. And, I think, it goes back to what Jay said in the preseason before this thing even got started, that he feels very comfortable playing all those guys. And it's really just going to be about matchups. It's going to be about pitching and, what left-handed or right-handed pitcher they're facing that day. And, somebody might not start the game, but they could finish the game kind of thing. And I think all these guys are aware of that being the possibility and how they're going to have to construct this thing, because I also found that very interesting that they think they have a couple All-American players, but it's going to be kind of a sum of the parts kind of thing in filling out the rest of those roster spots, and particularly the DH and the right field spot.
Last one for you, Glenn, here. I just want to get your thoughts on Chris Stanfield, the transfer from Auburn, who Jay was super high on. I remember he had that bite where he talked about like how he hit 2 rockets off of Paul Skeen, so as a freshman, so he had to bring him in eventually. But Chris Stanfield,
And he wasn't really impressive last year.
No, he wasn't. But he's off to a great start this year, hitting 500 already, 6 of 12 on the season. And he just seems like the perfect leadoff hitter. But at the same time, defensively, he's also flashed the glove a little bit. And as you mentioned, like, they've struck out 52 batters so far this season. So there hasn't really been that many opportunities for the Tiger defense to shine. But when Chris Stanfield's been asked to shine, he's looked really good defensively as well.
He's had, I think, three or four diving catches in four games. I mean, he's been really electric out there in the outfield, and you always knew that his defense was going to be what got him on the field, but his bat is going to be what keeps him on the field, and that's been something that he's been really improved with this year. We've spoken to him a number of times this offseason about just kind of how he's improved in that area and just the footwork and the discipline and the approach that he's kind of had this year and how it's been different than past years. It seems to be paying dividends because him and the other guy I'll throw in there is Derek Curiel, the freshman. Those two at the very top of the order have been lights out. They're getting on base a lot, and they're moving the offense. And that speed they have, they're probably the two fastest guys on the team. And, you know, they're going to be able to move the offense and score a lot of runs for this team.
Glenn, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate your insights and time, and at least you warm where you're at.
Thanks, Glenn.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
All righty. Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it. Glenn West, senior writer at go247.com. Want to tell everybody, entering the eighth inning, Tulane has taken the lead 4-3 over Southeastern. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 and our triple option feature right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Steve Geller and Charlie Long. It's our triple option feature. Steve, you go first.
Well, along with the Saints assistant coaching hires that we've been hearing coming in, the Saints also made a move hiring Ted Rath as their director of sports performance. Hopefully this guy can help on the injury front. 41-year-old sports performance coach, most recently worked with the Eagles from 2020 to 23. And while him and Kellen Moore didn't overlap there in Philly, the two have worked together in the past. Rath's first stop in the league came with the Detroit Lions as the assistant strength and conditioning coach from 2009 to 2015. And what do you know? That's when Kellen Moore was playing quarterback for the Lions. During his 15-year NFL career, Rath has worked on the staff of 8 playoff teams. He contributed to the Rams Super Bowl win in 2018 by helping them stay one of the NFL's healthiest teams for 3 consecutive seasons. So like I said, hopefully Rath can come here and help straighten out some of that voodoo that was on the team this year and maybe give a little help to the Pels too, because both those rosters were just decimated these seasons with injuries. And Ted Rath, now the director of sports performance for the Saints.
Most people remember him. He was the get back coach.
Yeah, there you go.
Sean McVay. Because Sean, man, he was a bit of a hothead early on in his career with the Rams. He didn't calm his nerves.
Just very emotional.
because I think ever since he got married, things, it's kind of that Floyd the Barber comment about Barney. He ain't going to get married. All this won't really affect him as much. Charlie.
Guys, our friends over at D1 Baseball, I almost brought this up with Glenn, but I wanted to save it for triple option. So here we go. They have a new thing called the Heat Sheet, which every weekend they'll be recording pitchers that throw 97 or more miles per hour. They had 17 pitchers in opening weekend throw 97 or more miles per hour. 4 of them from LSU baseball, guys. Kaysen Evans threw 99, Chase Shores touched 99, Maverick Rizzi touched 99, and William Schmidt hit 97. And included in that list, if you guys will recognize, Kaysen Evans, Maverick Rizzi, William Schmidt, 3 freshman pitchers throwing 97 or more miles per hour already. And then Chase Shores, I mean, Ben McDonald came on and talked to us about his first-round arm talent. He's hitting 99 on the radar gun, 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery, too, guys.
That's just remarkable. Guys, I sort of missed this during the NFL season when it ended, but during the 2024 NFL season, Jahmyr Gibbs, the halfback with the Detroit Lions, former Alabama running back who started at Georgia Tech, he averaged 6.4 yards a touch. It was the most by a player with 300 or more touches in a season. You got to go back to 2000 with Marshall Faulk.
Wow. That's good company right there.
Man, Marshall averaged 6.6. Man, was Marshall something back in those early 2000s. But, man, Jahmyr Gibbs, 6.4 yards a touch as a runner receiver. That is so impressive. because you know teams are going after him. They've kind of geared up, and when you touch the ball that many times, man, to average 6.4 yards, that is really impressive for a guy a lot of people questioned. Why y'all picked him in round one? Why would the Lions waste a first-round pick on Jahmyr Gibbs? That's why.
Do you remember when they had like their war room and they showed the video of them all celebrating that Jahmyr Gibbs was there at pick 12? Yeah, I think you understand why now. That kid is talented. He's fantastic.
And he runs with that combination power, speed, and he turns speed into power. But, man, he's so shifty, and he catches the ball well coming out of the backfield. Be interesting to see now the new dynamic. Getting bounced like they did against the Commanders to come back next year and how well that team will react to it. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here on hour number two of sports talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long, and at 6:25, Ali Cosell joins you, Steve. Talk about the Pelicans, and they crank things back up, what, Friday night, right?
Yeah, we're coming off the All-Star break tonight, but the Pels don't have a game until Friday at Dallas.
And then at 7 o'clock, Matt McMahon, and he got that vote of confidence.
They're streaking Scott. Now. They got two in a row.
Two in a row, and he got that vote of confidence from Scott Woodworth. And, again, we had talked about it that, you know, he got hired by Scott, so he was going to have a little bit of length of time. But, yeah, he's got to make it work. And recruiting's a big part of that. And, boy, you're going up against some heavyweights in the SEC who already got a big foundation. And you saw the difference when you watched Auburn and Alabama play, and also if you watched Tennessee, Florida also. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
Welcome on into our Wednesday, February 19th edition of the second half of Sports Talk. Steve Geller along with Charlie Long. We are here till 7 p.m. this evening. Yesterday, Charlie thought we were getting off at 6:30 for the LSU-Nichols game. That has been postponed to a later date because of weather. And I'm not disappointed in the fact that we got to go to 7 tonight, Charlie, but come on, baseball. What's going on with the game not being able to be played because it's too cold outside?
Yeah, but we do have the updates on, you know, what the games are going to be now.
Right.
We'll be playing on Monday of this upcoming week, Monday, February 24th. That game is going to be at the Box. And then they'll play the game in Thibodeau on Tuesday, April 8th. So they've kind of shifted things around. Mike was saying that Thibodeau got hit really bad by the storms last night, so the field conditions weren't great. And then it's, of course, going to be freezing cold tonight. So,
yeah, I thought it was funny because you hear Jay Johnson's post-game comments, and somebody asked him about, you know, how do you get your players ready for the weather? And he's like, it's going to be above 40 degrees, so I'm good.
Jay Johnson's the best, man. He's a baseball guy through and through. But unfortunately, no LSU baseball tonight. However, we will get that extra game this upcoming week on Monday, and then they will eventually. It's been postponed. It's not canceled.
Right.
We want to emphasize that.
They still will play Thibodeau as well.
Exactly. They still will play a game in Thibodeau. So we have that to look forward to, but it is a few months away.
Yeah, it's kind of odd, though. I thought that the Monday game will be played at Alec Box Stadium and not in Thibodeau for every reason that they have the matchup at Nichols in the April game, and the one on Monday will be at Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what went into it. It's just what we know.
Above our pay grade.
Yeah, exactly.
Last night in the hardwood, the LSU basketball team pulling out a second straight victory. Tigers taking down South Carolina big time, 81-67. LSU has now won two games in a row and have improved to 14-12 overall, 3-10 in SEC play. We're going to be hearing more from head coach Matt McMahon this evening, 7 o'clock, joining the Matt McMahon Show. We'll get into all that with him. And, you know, we talked about a little bit yesterday, Charlie, the rest of the slate for the LSU men's basketball team is pretty brutal. You got Florida on Saturday, Tennessee Tuesday, Mississippi State, Kentucky, Texas A&M, and that wraps up the regular season for the Tigers before the SEC tourney.
Back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back games against top 21 ranked teams.
No big deal, right?
Yeah, no, it's tough. And when we were talking with Toy Lloyd Brown yesterday about it, SEC is just brutal in college basketball. So, yeah, wrapping up the season with five straight games against ranked opponents. Like we said, Steve, if you can get to five wins in conference play at that point, it would probably be a win for Coach McMahon heading into next year. However, that's easier said than done because, as you mentioned, Florida, number 2 team in the country, Tennessee, number 6 team in the country, back-to-back road games against Mississippi State, the number 21 team. By the way, did Mississippi State pull off that win against Texas A&M last night? Last I had checked, they were winning. Let's see here. They did, in fact, beat Texas A&M, and they beat them pretty handily as well. That's a top seven ranked Texas A&M team. And then at Kentucky, and then you host A&M to wrap up the season. So a lot of really brutal matchups down the slate. You know, getting those back-to-back wins is a nice confidence boost. However, how much can they really build upon it with this slate that they have coming up, Steve? It's really tough.
Yeah, looking at some of the numbers from last night's win for the LSU Tigers, the scoring was really spread around, seeing Cam Carter had 17. You look at Mike Williams III with 13. Victorious Miller chipping in with 12 points there. Also, DeJai Bailey with 11 points. So it wasn't really just one person pouring it all in. It was really a team contribution there on the court to take down South Carolina. I know it's not saying much. The Gamecocks are still winless in conference play.
Yeah, I know Coach Brady's really high on Victorious Miller. He had some nice things to say about him last night on the broadcast, finished with 12 points on 4-14 shooting. But what really happened with LSU last night, getting off to that hot start, 41-27 in the first half, and then just kind of maintaining at the PMAC and picking up your second straight victory to feel good about yourself near the end of the season. Now we'll see, you know, how much they can do in these final 5 weeks, Steve. That's really going to be the big question. But, Steve, you had asked me yesterday, and I want to get, you know, your kind of thoughts on this. If I've started doing mock drafts yet.
Uh-oh, you dove in?
I have not yet.
Okay.
However, a lot of sites are. A lot of people are already getting their early mocks out, and
we
this
mentioned
is pre-combine.
Daniel Jeremiah is on mock number two already. I'm like, whoa, slow down,
on,
man.
Like, mock five by the time. Well, yeah, no pun intended there. By the time we get to draft season, so he does a bunch of them. We talked a little bit about his yesterday, how he had the Saints taking Mike Green. USA Today has a really fun little story here where they go through every single pick in the first round, and they have four different services that have done mock drafts already.
Okay.
USA Today, NFL.com, which is Daniel Jeremiah's draft that we talked about, the 33rd team, and then Pro Football Focus all have, you know, done early mocks pre-combine. The combine is now, what is it now, 9 days away, Steve?
Yeah, tickety-tock. Next week, we'll be cranking it up in Indianapolis.
Start on Thursday.
Starts on Thursday, right.
So it's technically 8 days away. It's a week and a day away. We're getting closer and closer to it, so I'm really looking forward to that. But they have four different services that have picked for the Saints at pick nine. USA Today has Georgia safety Malachi Starks, which this is the first time I've seen that, which is pretty interesting. NFL.com, as we mentioned, Daniel Jeremiah has them taking Marshall Edge Mike Green. The 33rd team has them taking Texas A&M Edge Shamar Stewart. And Pro Football Focus isn't taking Tennessee edge James Pierce Jr. So all going defense.
Yeah.
I know we talked a little bit yesterday about how I'm more of the idea, you know, this is kind of a really loaded defensive line class. So you might be able to get a stud in the second round at pick 40, where you're going to be picking in the second round, and maybe try and get, you know, best offensive player available, whether that be Tet McMillan, whether that be, you know, Tyler Warren, whether that be one of the offensive linemen like Will Campbell or Armon Membu, one of those types of guys. But all four of these services have the Saints taking a stud young defensive player. Now, different kind of opinions on these guys. Malachi Starks, you know, we had the discussion yesterday about not necessarily focusing on premium positions, right? If you just see a stud in this draft, make sure you lock him down. I like Malachi Starks a lot. That's the first time I've actually seen him mock to the Saints at pick nine, though. That's pretty interesting. Mike Green, Marshall edge rusher. All three other ones are edge rushers. A&M, Shamar Stewart, and then Tennessee's James Pierce Jr. Mike and I talked a little bit about Shamar Stewart off-air.
Okay.
He is the dreaded P word. Not the good P word.
Uh-oh.
Where you have production at the college level.
Potential.
Potential. He's built like Hercules. I mean, he's incredible athleticism from someone like Shamar Stewart, but back-to-back seasons of 1.5 sacks at the SEC level. You know, you're hoping that he develops into a superstar-level edge rusher when you get him into an NFL, you know, weight and conditioning program under a defensive line coach and let him develop. But it's that dreaded P-word that I'm a little bit nervous about there.
And
Steve,
we've heard so much before with other defensive ends drafted by this Saints squad that just really haven't panned out. There's tons of potential and growth, and we just haven't seen it yet, a la a guy, you know, with Peyton Turner, and in the past with someone like Marcus Davenport.
I'm looking for Shamar Stewart's official measurables, because he's like all of 290 pounds, which is funny because he's built significantly differently than someone like, you know, Mike Green, or even, as I mentioned, James Pierce Jr., which Pro Football Focus had mocked to the Saints. Both of them are smaller edge rushers, especially James Pierce Jr., who may be 240 pounds, but he is fast as all get out. Now, the kind of interesting things that's been popping up with James Pierce Jr. is that some reports have been showing up about character concerns with this guy, and who is that really coming from? And people are already joking, like, okay, well, this guy, he's super uber talented. The speed is evident with someone like him. Somehow he's going to fall to the Eagles at pick 32, and they're going to just scoop him up right at the end of the first round. But we'll see what happens there. So that's, I thought it was pretty interesting. Of these four sites, USA Today, NFL.com, 33rd Team, and Pro Football Focus, they all had the Saints focusing on defense
right
at pick number nine. Three of them have them taking different edge rushers, and then USA Today has them taking a defensive back with Georgia safety Malachi Starks.
Yeah, from the mock drafts that I was seeing early on, I can't recall all the websites off the top of my head, but it was definitely a heavy Tet McMillan from Arizona presence, and I feel like, you know, seeing some of these other ones that have come out lately, his stock, for whatever reason, has tumbled down the draft board, and I don't understand why.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, I think he's a clear top 10 pick in this draft. So if you want him, I mean, if he's even there, right? Because there's a couple spots ahead of the Saints where they could use a Tet McMillan.
Right.
I think of the Jets, right? With Aaron Rodgers leaving, is Davante Adams really going to be there long term? I don't think so either. So Tet McMillan would make sense for them. I think Tet McMillan would make sense for the Raiders because Jacoby Myers is a really good wide receiver too. Same kind of situation though. Davante Adams left them. They're kind of missing that wide receiver one void. And I think that Tet McMillan could fill that. So a couple squads ahead of the Saints where I think McMillan could potentially go. I don't think he would go to like the Patriots at pick four.
Right.
But it makes sense as a fit because the Patriots are also looking for that wide receiver one. You know what I mean, though. Like there's a couple squads ahead of the Saints where, you know, McMillan could potentially go ahead of them at pick nine.
Yeah, I think the Daniel Jeremiah latest mock had him going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a Mike Evans eventual replacement, which makes a ton of sense.
At pick 19.
Right. I was like, wow, that's
yeah,
like a
that
big tumble.
Yeah, that was surprising to me. And Daniel Jeremiah, he does all these mocks, and he's listening to what people are telling him. So
he's going
to
have a Zoom call tomorrow with some NFL media folks. Definitely going to tune into that and try and get a Saints question in for him for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And DJ is fantastic. He's awesome at what he does. And so him saying that McMillan could fall all the way to 19, I trust it early on. But to be fair, this is all pre-combine stuff.
Right.
We don't exactly know. Like, we'll get the official measurables, the official, you know, drills and all that stuff at the combine next week in Indianapolis. So, you know, we'll have to see. But early on, interesting to see a lot of these services have the Saints looking at defense in the first round.
What the all-important thing, too, at the combine, we've all seen the tape before, and that's what all these scouts are watching as well. It's really getting to sit down and have those one-on-one in-person interviews, getting to know a little bit about these players, trying to get a feel for them of what they're like, their attitude, and that's when you get those crazy questions that end up getting asked as well.
Yeah, and we'll see if James Pierce Jr. is apparent character concerns, I guess you would say,
right,
could pop up there. And then, of course, in that scenario, he will fall to Howie Roseman and the Eagles at pick 32, because of course he will.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some Pelicans basketball talk. The NBA back tonight, but the Pelicans not in action until Friday. Well, they'll be taking on the Dallas Mavericks. We'll get into all things Pels with credentialed NBA writer Ali Cosell right after the break. So stay tuned right here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller with Charlie Long. Happy to welcome in now credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans, Ali Cosell. Ali, how you doing, man? Thank God the NBA All-Star break is over. I was jonesing for some hoops. How you been?
Yeah, Steve. Look, I mean, the All-Star game is just nothing like what it used to be, right? That whole event. It's been for some time. So it's almost as depressing as watching the home team lose 10 games in a row, right? I mean, it's just not worth watching at times.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to hit off right with you before we get into Pel stuff. What did you think about this new format with the NBA All-Star game? Because it has just been getting killed.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it for a multitude of reasons. It seems like every year they change something about it. Now, this year, it looked like the games weren't even that important. What I mean by that is you had a game, and then you had about a 20-minute, 30-minute break. Then you played another game. And even in the midst of that final game on Sunday, to decide the winner, what did they do? They broke it up by stopping play to honor, right? What was it? All the TNT talk personalities, right? Shaquille, Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, and Ernie Johnson. So it just seemed like it was a lot more of a production than it was just watching basketball, right? And I hated that. In the past, boy, when I first started watching basketball, it was just strictly about basketball. I fell in love because I watched Michael Jordan, right, the best player in the league, go to the dunk contest. And you saw these guys try in the actual All-Star game. It hasn't been like that for some time. Now you've got G League stars trying to keep the All-Star, the dunk contest together. Steph Curry didn't even participate in a three-point shootout, which makes no sense considering it was held in San Francisco, right, his hometown, and he's the greatest shooter of all time. So I've got so many problems with the NBA just prioritizing promotional stuff, fluff, instead of just the actual game. It's really hurt the product to where it's just an unwatchable, you know, all-star event now to me.
It feels like it's twofold, Ali. Like, half of it is, you know, and NBA execs have come out and criticized it as well, and, you know, also the players, but Adam Silver's obsession with tournaments, you know, he brings in the play-in tournament, the in-season tournament, and now this tournament for the All-Star game format. And you just look at what the NHL is doing with the Four Nations tournament, and that is just wiping the floor with anything the NBA has come up with recently as far as players actually caring about an All-Star event. But that was the other side of the coin where, you know, Adam Silver has been begging players to actually, you know, put an effort in this All-Star game, or else it just kind of looks like a farce, but the players just don't care. So yes, the NBA holds some kind of, you know, they have to figure it out and how to make it more interesting, but it's also on the players to actually put in the effort to make it the All-Star game watchable.
Oh, it is. But you could use that argument, Charlie, you just made to me for any point during the last, 10 or so years. And that's the problem. Right? Whatever the NBA's tried has not worked. And I'm not a big fan of maybe paying the players, right, to participate like they do right in that in-season tournament, which I think is a success, which I know they're paying the players. But look, I think the brand of basketball, to do anything to lift it up in November, those early months, is key. And so I think that's actually a smart move, because when you look, whichever the winning team is, a lot of those players, right, getting $1 million, or if you're a losing team getting a little bit less, that's still a lot of money for most of the roster, right? So there's a lot of incentive. That's right, with the All-Star game, are you really want to give, you know, whatever X amount to guys that are making like $20 million and above? Just doesn't make any sense. So I don't know what the fix is, but it feels like a lot like the NFL, right, where players just don't care about this product. So if the NBA can't find anything, stop trying to promote it so much in the middle of the season, because it's going to be hard to make them care. They haven't cared for so long, and the season is so long, right? It's 82 games, and by the time you play this All-Star game, they're two-thirds through the season where a lot of guys are nursing some kind of injury, right, or at least just wear and tear, where you're tired. So I can't blame the players half the time for, you know, not wanting to get up for it anyways.
Yeah, speaking of wear and tear and injuries, we know the Pelicans have been suffering this season, sitting at 13-42 right now and just 27 games remaining in the season. Just curious, what can we look forward to with this Pel squad? Obviously, nothing really tangible to play for to close out the year, but 27 games left for them, a lot of the young guys at least, to go out and show us something.
Yeah, so you don't have the wins and losses to care about, but that's a good thing, right? The injuries hit, you were knocked out of it almost months ago. But here's the thing, you're going to get a good pick in the upcoming draft, likely at the worst, something in the top five, considering where the Pelicans sit and the remaining schedule and such. And that's good, because this draft is deep. And boy, if you could land one of the top two spots, Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper, any team would love to have one of those guys. And that would behoove the Pelicans, of course, to land one of those guys to add to this young talent pool. So for the rest of the year, what you want to see, Zion Williamson, finish the year healthy. But keep building that chemistry, on-the-court chemistry with Trey Murphy, who honestly looks like he's going to be your number two guy, right, on the court now that Brandon Ingram's gone, now that it feels like Trey has probably eclipsed C.J. McCollum in terms of just what he's able to do on the court. So build that chemistry up, and hopefully you can bounce back, a lot like the Memphis Grizzlies this year. A lot of people have been referencing that all year. They suffered through a very dismal last season. Look where they are now, right? Top three, largely, the whole season in the West. Because you've got the talent, so you just need to keep it healthy. And with the rest of the young guys, right? I know this team loves Brandon Boston. I'm wondering when he's going to get a standard contract. It's going to happen at some point. You've got your future center, right? Eve Mrs. You can watch him and his continued growth. Looks like he's finally not, or he's past that rookie wall, right? He looked like he disappeared for a few weeks there, but now he's back. So there's still a lot of things to watch because this team, I think, like I said, they're going to be competing for a top, you know, six, top maybe eight at worst spot if the injuries stay at bay next year.
Ollie, some breaking news from ESPN's Shams Charania. New Orleans Pelicans forward Javonte Green has agreed to a contract buyout and intends to sign with the Cleveland Cavaliers upon clearing waivers. Sources tell ESPN additional wing depth for the East best Cavaliers. That just broke quite literally minutes ago while we've had you on. So just want to get your immediate reaction to that.
That's not a surprise. I was hearing, you know, weeks ago that Javonte Green would likely be a buyout candidate, especially once the Pelicans announced they were going to keep Bruce Brown. People thought that maybe he would be a buyout candidate. But no, the reason you're doing this for Javonte is twofold. He's going to get to go to a winner and largely be in a bigger limelight to where he can play for his next contract. And the Pelicans, you know, they weren't probably entertaining on bringing him back, getting him a new contract over the summer anyways. And what this opens up for you now is the fact that now you can sign Brandon Boston a standard contract earlier. If they would have kept Javonte Green, not bought anybody out, they would have been about $186,000 underneath the luxury tax line. So that's not enough to sign Brandon Boston a contract till like the last week of the regular season. And here's the problem, 27 games left. He's played 42. He can play a maximum of 50, so eight more for the rest of the season if he's to stay on this two-way contract. Now that Javonte I see is leaving, I expect for news to shortly follow that they're going to be signing Brandon Boston a standard contract. And we'll get to see a lot more of him play down in the future.
Looking at the Zion Williamson situation here at the final stretch of the season, you know, he's been on the minutes restriction. He's not playing back-to-back games. Are we going to expect more of the, I guess, being cautious with Zion down this stretch since there's meaningless games, or will we see some kind of ramp up in minutes and maybe even taking part in back-to-back contests?
No, even Zion told us this right before the All-Star break that there's going to be an increase. Okay. And we're going to start off with probably not back-to-backs he's going to be playing in, but the minutes per game. He told us he expected to go up to at least 30. So starting, you know, on Friday against the Spurs, or excuse me, against the Mavericks, he's probably going to play closer to 30 minutes, if not a little bit more in that game. So that's going to be good to see.
Ollie, looking at that Mavericks matchup, I don't think I've talked to you since the earth-shattering trade that happened with Luka Doncic to the Lakers, but your thoughts on the Mavericks, where they're at, they just seem like a mash unit at this point. I'm sure that they enjoy this all-star break to potentially get some guys some rest, but I they're not going to be playing a full-strength Mavs squad. I know that much.
No, I mean, look, wow. The Mavericks, I feel for Nico Harrison and their fan base, and they're not staying on the same side right now, but you've got no bigs, right? Daniel Gafford, Anthony Davis, and Lively. They're all out for, you know, weeks, according to all the reporting. So they're very shorthanded, very reliant on Kyrie Irving. And, yeah, it's a very beatable team right now. But, look, we the Pelicans played them not that long ago, and they still lost to, you know, underhanded Mavericks team. So it'll be fun to watch, right? It's always when Najee Marshall goes up against Jose and such. But the Mavericks still have a lot to play for, right? That team definitely wants to at least, you know, ride out the storm until they can start getting some of their bigs back because they got real playoff aspirations. I mean, they think, and it's not hard to blame them, right? That one half of basketball we saw when Anthony Davis did play, they looked like one of the best teams in the West. So if they can get everybody healthy and get themselves in a position, they could go on a deep playoff run. So they're going to come hard against against the Pelicans in a couple of days.
Looking at some of the injured Pels on this roster, are we expecting anybody to come back now post All-Star break?
As far as who, I'm trying to think off my head. But I mean, Herb Jones just had season-ending surgery, so he's definitely done.
Misi had the knee hyperextension.
I'm sorry, who was that again?
Eve Misi. Is there any kind of update on his hyperextension?
Right, missed the Rising Stars action.
That was not severe at all.
Well, that's excellent to hear about Misi because, yeah, he's definitely been one of the bright spots. You mentioned he did hit kind of that rookie wall, but Eves is definitely it shows that the scouting department is doing a heck of a job at least finding the talent. Hopefully we can just keep him on the court and develop him.
Yeah, Steve, I mean, what, a pick 21? Incredible. Pelicans found a starting caliber type of player. And so if he can just get back, finish off the season by, like I said, it's a chemistry thing. Trying to figure out how to play alongside Zion Williamson, it'll give him a head start on next year. But here's one other thing I should point out. I think Kelly Olynyk now has cleared his visa problem, so he should be right. Good to go too, coming out of this All-Star break.
Yeah, that was a really odd situation, obviously, for him. I guess the hurdles going through that will be interesting to definitely see what that guy can kind of bring to this roster.
Yeah, because, look, he's under contract for one more year following this season. So can he fit a long time? Because right now the thought is, hey, he can shoot the three. He's consistently, for his career, shot about, 37 or so percent from that line. And that's what you kind of need a long Zion. You either need somebody that's going to play incredible paint defense and be a hard roller where he's drawing some defenders that way, get some offensive rebounds, or have that outside shooter. So I'm very curious to see how Olynyk does finish out the season on the Pels alongside Zion.
Ollie, also your thoughts on Bruce Brown and what you've seen from him in his first two games with the Pelicans, both those matchups Wednesday and Thursday of last week against Sacramento. Just kind of early on, I know that Griff talked a little bit about, he envisions both of them on this roster long-term, Olynyk and Bruce Brown. Mm-hmm. Olynyk's already under contract for next year. Bruce Brown's the one that's kind of an unrestricted free agent. So I want to get your thoughts on what you've seen from Bruce early on.
Yeah, Bruce Brown makes sense for this roster, right? If you think you're the Grizzlies from, a season ago to going back right in the thick of a playoff race, Bruce Brown's the exact type of experienced player that you want coming off the bench. Because, look, David Griffin, I thought he was spot on in that conference he gave where he, lamented, of course, the rebounding's terrible. They're going to have to improve on that. But the IQ, it's been nearly as bad. I mean, first three or so months of the year, I know you didn't have your regular guys, but the amount of turnovers, the amount of poor play, it was just evident. And they've kind of cleaned it up since, but they're still not playing smart enough. So Bruce Brown helps there. Defensively, he's a dog, right? He's a little undersized, 6'4", 6'5", but he reminds me a little of Josh Hart. Because when he's at his best, Brown, he's a good rebounder too. I just feel like I hope Pelicans fans haven't watched him so much staring at that box score, because right now he can't make a shot, right? His first week couldn't have gone any worse in terms of shooting the basketball. But he's a much better player. He's a very heady player. And I just feel like he's going to be a good complement to when you've got, like I said, the scores, right? And CJ, Trey, Zion, and whatever else you do this summer and whenever DeJounte gets back. Bruce makes a lot of sense, because that playoff run that he had with Denver, where they won the championship 2 years ago, that's invaluable for a team that honestly is lacking in guys that have been there, done that. So if you get to the playoffs next year, knock on wood, you're going to need guys like Bruce Brown.
One thing about, playing Sacramento that last game, I liked seeing Jordan Hawkins getting, got some run and ended up with 16 points. And he seems to, he does this roller coaster of effect of having a good game, off game. And just curious, what can we expect from this kid? It seems to have so much of that. We talked about it earlier, Charlie, that dreaded word of potential. But when can the full, I guess, Jordan Hawkins experience be unlocked? Because the kid just seems to be stuck in a rut.
Yeah, you hope it's this year. I mean, honestly, but I don't know if the back will allow him, because it sounds like what he's dealing with is more than just a regular back pain.
Right.
Right. And it's held him back. I mean, you saw October, he was lights out. Then this back injury crept up, and he hasn't been honestly the same since. But you're right, Steve. He has shown signs two of the last three games. He shot the ball reasonably well. And he's given the Pelicans a boost. If he could just finish the rest of the year out showing us that at least he's healthy, that would be a step for him. I know we wanted to see better defense from him, some playmaking, but I think right now you just want to see the kid finish a year strong with confidence and show us that that back, it's maybe not as large of a concern as it first seemed when that injury was first announced.
Ollie, definitely appreciate your time and looking forward to basketball back tonight. At least we got one game in action, and then Pelly's play on Friday, and we'll be winding down this season. It's been rough, but it's just still entertaining basketball. Is that all what me and Charlie are hoping for the rest of the way?
Yeah, look, I mean, guys, I think I don't have to tell fans this. 3-4 years ago, during the Alvin Gentry era, Dell Demps, this time of year when the Pelicans were out of it, there was really nobody to look at, right? There was no young talent because Dell Demps never built the team that way, but now there is. So there's plenty to watch for, even though, yeah, they've got 13 wins on the season. So it's going to be better than all-star basketball anyways, that's for sure.
Always awesome stuff. Thank you, Ollie, for the time.
Thanks, Ollie.
Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of your night.
For sure. Ollie Cosell, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans, joining us there. You can follow him at Ollie Cosell, OleHKosel, on Twitter. We're going to take a break, be back with more sports talk right after this on WWL. Who's dreamed of riding in a carnival parade? Well, WWL has your tickets to row with the crew of Argus on Mardi Gras Day. You can ride high atop a float with everything you need, costumes and throws for two, and it's all free. Just go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win the ride of a lifetime in the greatest free show on earth, powered in part by Mercedes-Benz of Covington. Let the good times roll with WWL. And we got another 4-0 baseball team right now, Charlie. The Tulane Green Wave were in action this evening. The cold weather didn't scare off them in Southeastern. The Green Wave coming out on top 5-3, and now the Greenies 4-0 on the season, and Southeastern drops to 4-1. So congrats to the Green Wave.
Yeah, come from behind victory as well here, Steve, putting up a three spot in the sixth inning to come back from down 3-1 early on. And then they eventually add an insurance run in the eighth to pull off a 5-3 win. One thing I thought was pretty interesting, Steve, looking ahead at LSU's baseball schedule, they don't play Tulane this year.
I know, you kind of missed that.
I know they have all the midweek games against the in-state opponents, but they don't play Tulane. They play Southeastern kind of late April. But I was just a little bit surprised by that. It feels like almost every year they do the rounds with the in-state schools. They all play each other. And that's the way for all these, you know, teams in the Southeast. Like the Mississippi schools all play each other. The Alabama schools all play each other. Like Troy played Auburn last night. Kennesaw State played Georgia. The Georgia schools all play each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no Tulane LSU.
And that's always a heated rivalry. I love to tell the story. When I was first moving down here from New Jersey, all my buddies up Northeast, they're telling me, oh, I don't know how you're going to hack it in Louisiana with no baseball. You love baseball, and you're going to go down there. There's no Major League Baseball team. And I swear to you, my first stop when I got into the state here was at a Denny's. I walk in. There's someone with a portable TV sitting there at the counter, and they're watching a Tulane baseball versus LSU baseball game. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll be just fine.
No MLB.
Right.
But
plenty of college action.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we come back, we'll wrap things up as we get ready for the Matt McMahon Show coming up on Sports Talk after Sports Talk at 7 p.m. So stay tuned. We'll be back with more right after this on WWL. Are you listening to WWL on the Odyssey app? We've seen growth in our listeners in our area who stream their favorite shows on their phones and who download our podcast. Now more than ever, you want to stay connected to WWL for breaking news, sports, and opinions, and just can't get it anywhere else. Download the Odyssey app today and make sure to go to My Audio, then in your settings, turn on notifications. That way you'll never miss a big story or a red-hot interview. WWL is always live on the free Odyssey app. Recapping some of the breaking news that you just let us know earlier, Charlie, that Javonte Green signing with the Cavaliers after agreeing to a contract buyout with the Pelicans, averaged a 5.8 points and 3.6 rebounds and 18 starts for the Pels this season, appearing in 50 games.
He's good wing depth for the Cavaliers, and we'll see how he does, because Cleveland's looking for the postseason at this point. See, they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. So good luck to him.
Yeah, and hopefully, like you said, this opens up some money and for Brandon Boston Jr. to get a deal done with the Pelicans. Coming up next, Matt McMahon Show right here on WWL. Stay tuned.